Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and riding shotgun this week is Bonnie to my Clyde, Thelma to my Louise. It's none other than Jessica Baker. Did you love that?
These intros are getting outrageous, man. Next week, you're going to be like, and with me today is Jess Baker.
She's all right. I don't know. I just felt, you know, the spirit led.
Yeah, I like being the Thelma to your Louise, and I don't know who either of them are. I just know they're a little duo.
Listen, I was actually questioning that introduction because they do drive a car into a canyon at the end of the movie.
And die.
Spoiler alert. Sorry about that.
I die with you, Matt. I drive off a cliff with you.
What do they say? Like drive hard, die, I don't know. Something. I don't know. It's Fast and the Furious.
Nothing I want to do. Oh, is it Fast and the Furious?
I think so, maybe.
Is it?
I don't know. Thelma and Louise is not Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, that's
You need to work on your pop culture references.
I don't watch Fast and the Furious. That's for the heathens. Also, I hate cars, so that's just not what I'm about.
That's true.
I mean,
it's
I don't hate them. They're practical. I quite enjoy.
They get
anyway,
you from A to B.
Yeah.
It's not what we're here to discuss. How are you? What's going on? What's
I'm
news?
I'm good. I don't know what's news. I'm just plodding along in my life. Oh, we had youth camp.
You had youth camp? It's true. I mean, I was there.
You were there? Act surprised.
Oh, my gosh. Tell me all about it.
Yeah, youth camp was a banger. We had like 43 kids or something come and got to spend a fair bit of time with them. Only had one broken foot. Which I think is a success for a youth camp, I would say.
Considering we hurled young people's bodies down a hill on a water slide and did a human pyramid in the pool.
Oh, that was the best moment of my life. I just wanted to be so included. The youth decided they were going to stand on each other's shoulders and get, like, see how many kids high they could get. And I was there on the edge just like, someone let me in. I want to do it.
You weren't there on the edge because the second that someone was like, Jess, you're tier two, I've never seen
on someone's shoulders
step into their gifting with such, I don't know, energy,
it was my calling.
Enthusiasm.
Yeah. I'm laughing about it now.
I can
it
see
was the best moment of our life. I can't even describe. If you want pictures, I have pictures.
There is a video on social media and all you can hear is you in the background.
I have no doubt.
Screaming, support the neck, support the neck.
Yeah, I mean, it was so dangerous. And I just like, I'm not a wild child, but I was there.
Yeah,
I was there
you
for
were
it.
There.
It was such a good time. But also Jesus was present in the and the spirit moved and it was great.
Can confirm that on both, you know, both the water slide and the human pyramid, that is not where the broken foot occurred.
No.
No. It was just walking down steps.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
with a big guy on your back.
Yeah. Well,
So she was asking for it, but we're really sorry for her.
Well, anyway, yeah. It was a good time.
Yeah.
Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Mark Rader, who preached during both our online and on-site services this past Sunday. And Jess and I will be putting the big three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. Now, for those of you who missed it, Mark continued in our series, Seven Letters, Seven Lessons, drawing discipleship teaching out of the book of Revelations. And we were on letter number 5 this week. I'm not going to be able to pronounce their name. It was something Sardine.
Sardines. Yeah, that's all I got.
That's
Roxy
I
called
got.
Them Sardines.
It's a beautiful place. Yeah. You can listen to that message again through our regular GBC Sermons podcast. But for now, Jess, I'm interested on what your thoughts were coming out of Mark's message.
I have just been pondering this week what it would actually look like if Jesus was coming back, if we knew the time and date and it was sometime in the next year, how my discipleship and evangelism would be different.
Yeah.
I think I would fail miserably the way I'm going. I'm really playing the long game. I'm more the tortoise than the hare in terms of this race. But yeah, I was just kind of pondering and what would it be different? Because you don't want to be annoying to your friends. There's only so many times I can yell at them, repent, the day is near.
I'm just not sure if that's the approach we're after either.
No. Yeah, so trying to think of like, okay, so we're told to kind of wake up and get the job done and we've got a big job to do. But what does that actually look like for us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit convicted because when Rader was like, what if Jesus came at the end of the year? My first response was, I'm just not sure if I'm ready for that though.
Like, I've got a 5-year plan.
I don't even have a mortgage yet.
That's the life goal, Matt, is the mortgage. Do have one, can confirm, not a fun time.
But yeah, I was like, oh my gosh, that's such a selfish non-Christian response.
Yeah.
Like to be like, I'm not sure if I want that to happen. So
I'd only have 6 months with my dog.
Where are we at on the dog? Oh, just as a little side.
The dog's due tomorrow, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen. So we're praying over the womb of Maple. The dog's due tomorrow. I'm very excited.
Oh, and the Lord creates. It's a beautiful thing. Well, I think it's time for us to start looking at the three big questions submitted through Slido this week. So what are the questions for today, Jess?
So question one is, how do we be ready in an ever-changing world? Mm-hmm. Question two is, what do we need to recognize about our times and how do we act accordingly?
Yeah.
And question three is, as a faith community, if Jesus were to return at the end of the year, what should be at the top of our list?
Oh, that's a good one. Because I guess like you can think individually and, you know, this series being on discipleship is a bit of a, you know, we're starting with looking at ourselves, but yeah, what does that actually mean for us as a wider community, as GBC?
Yeah.
That's exciting. Keen to hear about that. Well, there's only one thing missing from this duo, and that is the third part of the duo, which is Mark Rader himself. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks, Matt.
I don't know what the other character is in Bonnie and Clyde or Thelma and Louise, but actually I think Brad Pitt's in Thelma and Louise. So are you Brad Pitt in this situation?
I think that's probably
and
a bit of
the two women driving the car.
It's probably a bit of a stretch to say that I'm a Brad Pitt in any scenario. But
you're the same age, aren't you?
Does he survive?
Just or an does, age. That's the he, only
he's,
way.
He's not in the car when it goes
he's
off
not
the cliff.
In the car when they
then
drive
I'll be
off.
Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Maybe he abandons us in our hour of need.
No. I'm just saying to maintain your memory.
Yeah. That's nice. I appreciate that. Listen, Rader, there's a big announcement happening this Sunday in the PM. You look confused, but you know all about
it.
What? I'm wondering if you can give our listeners out there a little bit of a taste or a teaser.
Yeah, give us a spoiler.
A teaser, spoiler alert.
You heard it here first on the big three, cutting news in GBC.
So, we probably need to spoil a third movie then just to make sure it's a big three, spoiler alert.
Dumbledore dies.
We've crushed everyone.
Oh, I was joking.
Oh, sorry.
You
sorry.
Monster.
You jumped on that so fast. Let me crush the souls of the children in the world. I've got it ready.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, heavy. I don't know where that came from. I'm so sorry.
Okay. Well,
back to Sunday.
Back to Sunday. Not nearly as traumatic, hopefully. Essentially, we're looking to pilot something different in term two in our evening congregation. Mm-hmm. Yep, one of the things that as a leadership we've come to really realize out of a year of not meeting physically was that perhaps how we meet on Sundays or how we had met on Sundays wasn't perhaps the only way we could meet. The fact that we could meet digitally, while it wasn't as nice, while it wasn't as good as we might have liked, it was just kind of this really kind of an eye opener. And I think on top of that, there was the recognition that perhaps the way we've always been doing things hasn't actually been serving our goals, really. And so, what we're planning to do is to ask our evening congregation to join us in a pilot. It'll be, I guess, 10 weeks, so just the term itself. And we want to have kind of a 2 week discipleship cycle. So the first Sunday will not look like a normal church service. There won't be any sung worship. There won't be a sermon, but there will be an opportunity to engage with a particular aspect of our life and to talk about it from the perspective of faith. And that's going to take a whole bunch of different forms. And you'll have to wait for Sunday to hear all of those sorts of forms. And that will be kind of what we're sort of terming as kickoff. Which then, of course, reminds us that the work of the week is actually where the invitation of God really exists for
where the
us.
Game is played, game some is would played. Say.
Yes, sport.
And then the sport. Second week in the cycle is halftime, right? Which is how we've talked a bit about services for a number of years now. That will look like, that'll look more like a normal service. So we'll have worship and a sermon and all those sorts of things, but also an opportunity to reflect on what we learned the week before and how it's made a difference in our life. And then also because it's halftime, the next week, the Monday to Saturday, also becomes kind of the second half, the second part of our discipleship cycle. So it's a different way to meet, but like we're really, really keen to make sure that people, I hope that it reinforces for people that discipleship is a 7-day a week
process. Yeah, awesome.
That Sundays plays a part in that, but it's not the only part. But also to recognize that, you know, when we, I hope that people don't see it as kind of a week on, week off.
Yeah.
Right? No. Like it's, you know, it's the worship week and it's the not, like, no. It's all discipleship.
Yeah.
But discipleship can take different forms. So I think, you know, I'm really excited about the possibility of it. And, you know, all the people that I've spoken to where we've kind of dripped it to people and said, what do you think? The response has been overwhelmingly positive. So I'm feeling quite optimistic that on Sunday night people will go, yes, let's give it a swing. And see what happens, because I think that there's great value for our discipleship in that space. So yeah, really looking forward to it. So be there.
Can confirm that this whole game analogy, Raider did want to do, like, what was it, puck drop or something like that?
Yeah, puck drop. Yeah, and then
he wanted it to be hockey reflective, and I'm just like, no, we're just not about that.
I struggle with the term halftime, to be honest.
So I'm okay with halftime because there's oranges, there's food.
Yeah, like, but oranges?
I don't know. I like
bring out the
citrus.
Chocolate.
Listen, that's not what we're here to discuss, but that's fine.
Anyway, but I'm here for it. I'm ready for the vote.
This Sunday, it's going to be wild.
Yeah.
Well, enough about that. Let's get into the big three.
So this church, the Sardinians, or the Sardines, or the whatever they're called. What are they called?
The Community of Faith at Sardis.
Great. Love that. Love that. Exactly what you said. They're told that Jesus is going to come back as a thief in the night. And the idea is that you're not sitting up watching for thieves every night. If you do, you have wild anxiety and you need to see a psychologist. But they're like, you just don't know when he's going to come. You don't expect it. So how do we actually be ready in this ever-changing world that we live in?
Yeah. I mean, I think that if I know that I can't really change the question, but if I could change the question. I think one of the issues is is about how do we live ready when we know that Jesus has been delayed for 2,000 years? Like, to some degree, that's almost the more pressing tension. If things were changing, but we knew Jesus was coming back by the end of the year, you'd be like, okay, things are changing, but Jesus is still coming back. Yeah. So here we go. I think the big question is, what? I mean, it's been 2,000 years. Jesus said he was coming back soon then. So
I'm guessing his idea of time is very different to ours.
Well, maybe he's just like that person who's always late to a party.
But 2,000 years late? That's, well, that's rude. Not saying Jesus is rude. I take it back.
This might be the time to introduce you to some doctrine. But
please do. We need it.
But, you know, again, some of that is the genre. Like, I've talked a bit in this series about the genre of apocalyptic literature.
Yeah.
Apocalyptic literature, by its very nature, is about the end. And part of its message is that you can hang on because the end is so soon. I can encourage you all I want, but if I say, listen, you have to hold on for 2,000 years, people are going to be like, oh man, I'm gonna struggle with that. So it's part of the genre, but it certainly is. It's also been part of Christian belief, right? So some of our earliest creeds make reference to the fact that Jesus is coming back again. Mm. He's going to come back visibly and physically and judge the world and all that kind of stuff. So there has been this expectation, but it's so easy to get lost in the fact that it's been 2,000 years and, you know, people have been so wrong about it so many times. You know, history is littered with examples of people who knew when Jesus was coming back. You know, there was a famous one in the mid 1800s in the United States, and people were so convinced. Not only they sold houses, they quit jobs, like they just all in on the date, and then, well, obviously it didn't happen.
Awkward.
Jokes on that.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, and you know they went back, realized they forgot to carry the one, and set it for the next year, and Jesus still didn't come back. But it was so a bit of a complete debacle, and it had implications for people's faith, right?
Yeah.
So you know, trying to manage that expectation of his return without getting too wound up in it is a tricky one.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, ever-changing world or delay, however you kind of frame it up, I think that it's almost like we have to have an eye on the end game, right? The eye on the fact that Jesus could return at any point in time. And while you don't want to live in fear of that, you know, or without any wisdom, like kind of going, well, you know, I'm never going to make any long-term plans because Jesus might come back and then what's the point? Like, there's wisdom in, you know, getting the mortgage and going through, you know, okay, maybe that wasn't a great example, but you're like making plans for your life and, you know, those sorts of things. There's wisdom in that stuff. But how we keep an eye on the potential imminence, I think is a lot trickier. Like it's almost as if, you know, kind of that pop culture reference of, you know, you just got to live, you know, seize the moment, right? To some degree, that's almost what we need to do. Mm. Like live each day as if it were your last. Mm. You know, that kind of sense of, you know, we really got to take seriously the fact that Jesus may return today. Mm. So let's be about it. Yeah. And I think it, at the very least, it ought to, as I talked about on Sunday, it ought to heighten our urgency a little bit to kind of go, you know what? Not to leave those opportunities to one side because, I'll get another opportunity tomorrow, or there'll be another opportunity, or maybe next week I'll have the conversation or whatever it might be. But actually to kind of bring things to the front and say, okay, well, not because Jesus is going to return today, but like, let's be about the work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, let's try to be as urgent as we can be. And I think we need to recognize as well, I think this is really important for us. Not only is there wisdom in making plans, but we can't live in a heightened sense of urgency forever. Mm. Like we're just not built for it. Like God created us in ways that our lives are so cyclical, right? Mm. And we all know it, right? There are times when things are going great and everything is easy. And then guess what? There are times when it's like the exact opposite, but generally speaking, it's, you know, seasonal, right? Or cyclical or something. Like there's ups and downs in all of our lives. Mm. And I think that we need to recognize that no one can live in this heightened sense of expectation for a really long time without kind of, it's just too hard. So I think we kind of need to pace ourselves in that. But I think to have an appropriate level of, you know what? I need to be about the work of the kingdom because the time is drawing closer.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think even that might just give us just a little bit more impetus to be about the work of the kingdom, to be about the work of our discipleship.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of help us prioritize some of those things. I think that might be as much as we can expect about being ready. I think we'll all be surprised when Jesus shows up, right? Like, I don't think anyone's going to go, I knew it, you know,
right on time. Except for one guy in his bunker will be like, yes, I was right. With his canned foods.
Bless him. Yeah. So I think we're all going to be taken by surprise, but you'd like to think that we could at least go, oh, wow. Mm. You know, oh, and I actually kind of got through quite a bit of stuff, you know, kind of deal. So
I think that's really interesting because like when I first read this question, my first response was, oh, like the heart of this question is like, what are the things that we need to do? Because when we're getting ready, we've normally got a list. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when we go on holidays, we've got our holiday list of all the things we got to take, and you work your way through and you tick them off and then you're ready to leave, right? And so like when I first read this question, the way I read it was that the heart of the question is, what do I need to do in order to be ready? And kind of obviously referring to the fact that it's hard when the world is always changing. But the world is always going to change. Mm. That's the one consistent of our world. It's a beautiful irony. And so the focus needs to be not on what we do, although it is, but our attitude. Like it's an attitudinal shift.
Yeah. And it's kind of how do you prepare for something that you cannot guarantee is going to happen? Right? Like sometimes I remember I was going to put some fertilizer on the lawn. Right. But like you needed to water it in. So I was like, the next time there's going to be rain late in the week, I'll try to remember to, I'm not sure I ever remembered, but like it was that whole kind of, how do you know when the next rainy day is? So you kind of, double the work or whatever the case might be. Or, you know, from a sporting analogy, like I am always ready for my hockey team to win the Stanley
Cup. I was
just
about to say, and it was meant to be a dig. How do you know when the Maple Leafs are going to win?
I don't, but I'm certain it's going to
but
happen.
But you're ready.
I'm certain it's going to happen. Possibly in a parallel universe that I will not exist in. But that's actually kind of a helpful, because I can't guarantee it. There's nothing I can do to make it go faster or happen. But I'm ready. I got my tattoo picked out.
No, not really. You've got your tattoo.
No.
Yes,
no.
Please.
I would have been there for that. Yeah. We should do that on the big three.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm probably joking because never mind. Well, that's another topic for another day. But, you know, like I'm ready to celebrate. Mm. I'm ready for that to happen. Mm. In the meantime, I just get depressed every time they're
playing. I'm just going to wear my jersey.
that's right. You know, like, you know, and to some degree, it's not a bad parallel with how we're supposed to live our lives. Like right now, people will mock me for cheering for the Maple Leafs, just like some people might mock us for a belief that Jesus is literally coming back. It's like, I don't care. I've got the jersey.
Yeah.
I know their schedule. I watch all their games. Like, I'm in. I am in on this one. Mm. You know, and we need to be in on Jesus coming back and need to be kind of as ready as we can be. And that's probably not a bad illustration, particularly what you just said, because there's nothing I do to help that.
No.
Right? If there were, I'm not sure it would help. But yeah, you know, like I think that's not a bad way to think about it. Mm. So
Well, let's move on to question two. So Rita, as you were preaching on Sunday, you were saying that the Sardines, that one of their issues was that they weren't reading and recognizing what was happening in their culture, and therefore not acting accordingly. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's the discipleship lesson for us, that mm-hmm. we need to be on the look and kind of reading our culture. But how do we go about that? What do we need to do to recognize what's going on in our times, and how do we act accordingly to that?
Mm. Again, I think I may surprise you with where I'm going to go with this, because I think it's an amazing question. I think it's a great question, because it cuts to the heart of what are we doing, right? Mm. If the previous response was about our attitude, then this is really about what we are doing. But I'm not sure that it's primarily related to whether Jesus returns or not, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think the reading the times for us, I think one of the most critical things is for us to recognize how our world is changing and how the gospel, not that the gospel changes, but how we need to present the gospel in a changing environment.
Mm.
I'm not sure that I've reflected on this on the Big Three before, but you know, like the Billy Graham Crusades, I think it was in 1959 that Billy Graham came to Australia. I think he came a couple of the times after that, but that was the big one. You know, thousands of people got saved, and there are people in nearly every church, it seems, across Australia who are of that age, who remember either being there or were saved at that, or, you know, like, you just remarkable. But that kind of evangelism doesn't seem to, quote unquote, work anymore. Mm. Like, our society is different.
Yeah.
And so I think one of the questions we have to ask is, like, we're still called to make disciples.
Yeah.
We're still called to share the good news of Jesus. But holding an evangelistic concert with a sermon at the Sydney Cricket Ground probably isn't the way forward on that. So I think we need to be very aware of how our world is changing in terms of how people are thinking about themselves and their place within the world, the goals that people have, the big issues that they're concerned with, and then being able to speak into those circumstances and into that situation. And that's hard work, because as churches, I think I think any institution or organization falls into this. We do what used to work.
Yeah.
And we do it until it's so obviously not working anymore.
We flog the dead horse.
Yeah. You know, and so I think we need to be kind of, and this is ironic that I'm saying this, but early adopters on stuff, right? Because I'm not an early adopter on technology or any of those sorts of things. But we do have to try to figure out, so what's going on in our world, and how does the gospel speak to the needs of our world, right? Now, again, you can't change the nature of the gospel, right? So, you know, eventually you're going to have to talk about sin, and you're going to have to talk about Jesus's death and resurrection and those sorts of things. But, you know, like, people are asking questions about, you know, climate change, you know, and so how does the gospel speak into that? Well, of course it speaks into it. God created the world. He gave the stewardship to us. We botched it up. Jesus has come to restore the thing. So we can partner with him in that. Well, there's a space where we can address a very concrete need from the perspective of theology, and perhaps help people bring them a step or two closer to recognizing the truth in Jesus. You know, there's been a shift apparently on most searched verses. It used to be John 3:16. Now it's Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you.
Yeah,
right?
That's because we're all riddled with anxiety.
What are the plans? What's going on?
But it's such an interesting change, right? The first one was about, you know, for God so loved the world that he sent his one and only son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. It was all about sin, salvation, right? And now it's about God's plans, and are they good?
Yeah.
And you just kind of go, okay, so what does that tell us about our culture? And again, we can't avoid sin. It's like it's part of the story. But the way we talk about it, the way we communicate it, probably needs to shift a little bit, or the order in which we talk about it.
Yeah.
And you know that you want to kind of do a bait and switch and, oh, Jesus loves you. Bang, you sinner. you know, like that's probably not going to be very helpful either. But, you know, how we figure out what's happening in our world and then respond, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
You know, I think the church has generally been kind of late to the party. Mm. They haven't picked up, you know, what's we haven't picked up. I should probably say it's, you know, I'm part of the problem, you know. we haven't picked up how our world has changed and how the gospel speaks into a new situation. Because that's the beauty of the gospel, right? It speaks into every situation, every culture, every time. It's always relevant. Mm. We just may need to kind of reorder the telling of it. We might need to open different doors that allow people to enter into the story, allow them to have different on-ramps into their own journey of faith, give them a longer time before they decide about whether they're going to believe. Mm. You know, those sorts of things, I think, just need to be, we need to be quite nimble, I think, in that space.
Can I ask the reader, because I know that for some people, they might come from the perspective of, no, like the gospel story starts with Jesus and you've got to hit those key points at the beginning. So like, I don't know, how does that perspective work in this, or what would you kind of say to someone with that perspective, just to, you know, throw you under the bus?
Yeah, sure. I mean, at one level, the gospel story is the gospel story. Mm. Right? I think it's, you know, the worldview that we have is the good creation, busted by sin, redeemed by Jesus, on the path to total restoration. Right? That's the big story. And you know, that remains the same.
Yeah.
And Jesus's death and resurrection still lies at the very heart of our hope. Mm. And our relationship with God still is kind of the goal, right? That he might dwell with us and we with him. So, you know, at one level, it doesn't change at all. But I also think that the story is perhaps a little bit more flexible.
Yeah.
Right? That it's more nuanced, it's more multifaceted, that it can do more than just tell itself one way.
Yeah.
You know, like the gospel story is a little bit like a good set of Lego, right? You know, the set on the box is the gospel. Mm. But once you break it up, you can actually make little sub-stories out of it, which is kind of the Old Testament, right? And the New Testament. Oh, here's a little story about Abraham. Is that the gospel? No, 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 but it's made of parts of the gospel. Let me take it apart. Here's the story of David. Is that the gospel? No, 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 but it's part of the story of David. Take it apart. Here's a psalm. Here's a prophet. Yeah. Here's Peter. And so you actually can, there's more ways you can get people in and start playing with the pieces, so to speak, if I can push the image too far, you know, and ultimately you can kind of say, hey, do you want to build the real thing? Like, do you want to build the set on the box?
Yeah.
And that's where you get the whole story. You're like, oh, great. You know, now it makes sense. But I think there's more ways in for people. Mm. You know, so I think for many people in our culture, they don't see themselves as sinners. It doesn't make any sense to them. Yeah. Mm. So telling them that Jesus came to save them from their sins, at one level, certainly true, but doesn't kind of strike them as being particularly helpful. Mm. It's like being told, hey, you're drowning when I'm standing on the beach.
Yeah.
I don't need a lifesaver.
Yeah.
I don't need someone with a red ring to kind of, what are you doing? Like, leave me alone, right? Yeah. So I think we need to kind of help people on their journey of, so, you know, and I've said this before, Jesus came to do more than forgive our sins, right? That wasn't his only thing. Mm. And when he came, when it, you know, his preaching ministry begins, it is the kingdom of heaven, right? The kingdom of heaven has come. He doesn't say hardly anything about sins or his death until later in the gospels. He's all about the kingdom. So like forgiveness is critical, without which it's hard to enter into the kingdom. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, he came to do a lot more than that. Mm. He came to restore and renew the world, right? And so you just think, okay, there's more to the story than we sometimes reduce it to. You know, we kind of reduce it to Jesus came to save us from our sins. And you kind of go, listen, no one else could do that.
Yeah.
Really big deal, right?
Yeah.
You know, not a small, insignificant thing, but boy, oh boy, there's more to it. Mm. There's more to it. Mm. And so what do we do with that? You know, how do we figure that one out? And even, you know, I think the fact that sin takes on so many different types.
Yeah.
You know, there's trespasses and missing the mark and folly, you know, and ignorance, right? All of those can lead to sin, but they're all quite different nuances of sin. And so I think there's lots in the story for us to kind of help people. I believe this about the Bible. It is like, it's unfathomable. Mm. Like, it's just deep and wide and long, and you can swim around in it forever, you know, and there's just so much it's so much more flexible, so much more powerful, so much more alive than we sometimes give it credit for. We kind of treat it like we can put it in a box and go, I've explained it.
Yeah.
Like, no way. Mm. No way. That thing is just alive and all over the shop. Who knows what it'll do in someone's life, you know? And so I think the story that it tells, the gospel story, is very, very similar.
So if I can push the Lego analogy, which I loved because it's better than any sport analogy that you do. So if you met someone and you wanted to introduce them to the gospel and you knew nothing about them, you only could read our culture, what's the first piece of Lego that you'd pick up? Ooh, intrigue.
Well, I think that... again, wow! This
under the bus. Boom, 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 boom.
Now we're making this image work hard. I'd probably spill all the Lego out and say, which piece do you like?
But then have you got to sit there explaining every story of the Bible?
No. Because if they start building something, kind of, you know what, that looks a little bit like this.
Oh, yeah, okay.
See where you go. Right. So to some degree, you want to ask them. You know, like, it probably wouldn't be this overt, but like. Tell me about spirituality. Mm. Like, did you have beliefs as a kid about God? How do you think about God now? What do you think about spirituality? Did you have any experiences of God? Like, and just kind of, you'd want to do some listening, I think.
Yeah.
Because without that, you're just, you're kind of.
You're just throwing Lego at them.
Yeah, you're just throwing
and
Lego
that stuff
at
hurts.
Them. Leaving them from the step on in the middle of the night. All sorts of things. That's right. So, and I think once, you know, if they built something, then you can say, okay, you know what? That's really interesting. Mm. You know, can I tell you about someone who had a similar experience?
Yeah, wow.
Can I tell you about someone who, you know, in the Bible who, you know, experienced something quite similar and met Jesus? Can I tell you about, you know, Abraham and the long delay of the promise. Can I tell you about, you know, I think that there'd be lots of spaces because the Bible's full of very human, very frail stories. Like, I love that about it. It's not full of victory stories because that would just be so depressing. You know, like, it's so nice to feel a bit smug every so often and kind of go, oh, look at me, I'm better than that. possibly not, but you know, it's so nice that there are examples of people who just failed, didn't trust God. Learned their lesson, failed to trust God again almost immediately afterwards. You're like, oh, that sounds so familiar. You know, so there's something really, really wonderful about that. Yeah. So there's a lot of brokenness in the Bible. Mm-hmm. To some degree, it's like a wonderful story for our time. Mm. I was reflecting on this yesterday when I was lecturing in terms of how our culture has changed. And you're like, I'm old enough to remember when the original Superman movies came out. And Superman was just this really nice, powerful, good guy. And now all the superhero stories, like, it's, they're interested in the broken back story. Mm. Like, all of the superheroes now, they're flawed individuals, and we tell the stories of their flaw as well as their power.
Yeah.
And there's something that we love about that. Well, the Bible is full of those sorts of stories. You want busted back story? Have a look at Abraham. Have a look at David. Geez, they're everywhere.
Take your pick.
Take your pick. And so there's something really, I think, quite powerful in some of those, you know, the backstory of biblical characters.
The heroes, their untold stories.
There you go.
I hear a trailer coming on. Well, let's move on to question three.
So the church and Sardis were told that they were doing some good stuff. They had some good stuff going on, but Jesus was telling them they were missing the most important thing that he was interested in. So as a community of faith for us at GBC, if Jesus were to return at the end of the year, what should be at the top of our list of things to do?
Ooh, very good question. I mean, I like it because it's corporate, you know, because it is to the churches, right? It's not to, you know, individual in the third row at Sardis. You know, you need to hear this.
You are failing.
You are failing.
Everyone... No one sits in the third row. Everyone's at the back.
Well, they weren't Baptists, right? So maybe they did, right? It was a sign of their faith. That's what we should do. We should sit at the front.
Sit at the front.
I mean, I mean, I know what I think that I'd like to see us do, right?
Yeah, we'll take that.
That's what we're asking. That is exactly what we're after right now. Please proceed.
I mean, I look at us as a community of faith, and, you know, if I can be really honest, I think there's lots of stuff that we do really well. And we have a lot of really good people, passionate about Jesus, passionate about the kingdom, keen to serve, growing in their faith. Like, there's lots to celebrate. But I look at us as a community of faith, and we have very few people come to faith. Like, very few. And, you know, for a church our size, not that we're that big, but you'd kind of think, you know, there's 600 or 700 people on the roll. Geez, you'd like to think we'd see more people come to faith, or at the very least, more people on the journey of faith. I think I'd be very comfortable with that, you know? I'm not sure that I'm not as big a fan anymore of the binary not saved, saved, but very, very, very open to the whole, oh, we've got a cohort of people in our congregation who are moving towards faith. You know, they don't yet believe in Jesus, but they're here all the time. They're in a life group. They're asking questions. Oh, man, I'd be all over that. So, I mean, I think we need to be, as a community of faith, I think we need to be focused on that. You know, and as Belinda Lakeland, who's joined our staff as a consultant.
So fancy.
Very fancy. She's great. I love what she's bringing to our team already. But, you know, when she talks about plan A, you know, God's plan for every believer wrapped around the Great Commission, it starts with growing. Like, it starts with our discipleship. From the perspective of, if I'm going to ask you to begin to follow Jesus and I am not, that's a little weird. You know, you should buy a Toyota. Why do you drive a Ford? Oh, because I don't think Toyotas are very good. You know, like, well, where's the authenticity in that? Yeah, you know, like, you know, if I tell you you should drive a Toyota, I better have a whole bunch of Toyotas, right? You know, so I think there's something about the authenticity of our witness that comes from our growing. And, you know, we hope people won't just put their faith in Jesus, but they'll be changed by him. So if I'm never changed, if no one ever notices any change in my life, then, oh, man. So I think that the priorities for us really need to be about discipleship and evangelism. You know, to some degree, they should always be the priorities. But, and again, you know, to reflect on something I said a little bit earlier, I think, you know, one of the things that COVID or the, not COVID itself, but the lockdown, the period of time when we were not able to meet face to face. One of the things that revealed was just, and this is my reflection, so I don't want to put this on anyone in the congregation. It's not about naming names, but I just felt that as a church, we have failed people in helping them be self-sustaining disciples of Jesus. You know, I think the thing that still worries me are not the people who have left our church to go to another church. I'm disappointed, I guess, but if they're in another church following Jesus, like, okay, like, I've got to be okay with that.
It's one kingdom.
Yes, it's one kingdom, so okay. But it's the people who, when we stopped meeting face-to-face, their discipleship shriveled. And I think to myself, you know, now, okay, some of that might be on them. But I think we, as a church, I, as a leader, I don't think we've done enough to really equip people in that space to be able to survive a pandemic, to be self-sustaining, self-feeding, you know, followers of Jesus. And so I really feel that there's been an enormous lesson, I'm not sure that's been learned, but certainly a lesson that has been revealed, right? Like, we've got to do better at that. And that's part of the reason why we want to try this discipleship cycle at night, because it's just a realization of, you know, Sundays are good. They play a part in our discipleship. I think for lots of people, Sundays is a part of their rhythm. It's where they hear teaching. It's where they gather with other believers. Lots of good stuff in it. But, man, discipleship is so much broader than that. You know, it's 7 days a week. So how are we helping people to be 7 day a week Christians, you know?
Full time.
Full time. And, you know, I think evangelism the same way. You know, the whole idea that, you know, the main game is out there, really. You know, I don't expect, I don't expect a lot of random non-Christians to walk in off the street. You know, if anyone comes in, it's going to be because somebody invited them. You know, now, okay, occasionally, you know, we have had the occasional story of people kind of just God does something in their life and they show up.
Yeah.
And you're like, great, like fantastic. But, you know, the norm is going to be people inviting their friends. And, yeah, so how does that work, you know? So I think those those things need to be kind of at the very forefront of our priorities.
Yeah.
And, you know, it, like it feels a bit like a motherhood statement, right? Like, well, shouldn't they always have been? Mm. Yeah. They probably should always have been. And I suppose we've always paid lip service to them, right?
Yeah.
You know, evangelism is important. Yeah. Discipleship is important. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You throw
it
in there every now and again.
Yeah. But I feel like, particularly coming out of 2020, but you know, also out of the letter to the church at Sardis, that, yeah, if Jesus were coming back by the end of the year, I would like to say personally that I have contributed to the growth of the community of faith here as followers of Jesus, that I've done more than I have in the past, that I've done more than I did at the start, right?
To
see them equipped to be followers of Jesus and to be Great Commission disciples.
Yeah.
Will we have arrived at the end of the year? You know, I pray we'll be a lot further than I think we will be, but maybe not. But I think that's the priority for us. And to, you know, I think, you know, our theme for this year is about discipleship. And as far as I'm concerned, I want to be about discipleship in a way we haven't been before.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've talked a big game, but I wanna actually show up on the field.
Yeah,
you know, like I really want people to go, wow, this church is serious about discipleship. Mm. You know, and I know that. I mean, this is a bit of a tangent, but I know that we'll probably lose people over that.
Mm.
Like because it's going to be a bit uncomfortable. Mm. And that I'm not sure what to do with that. I'm not sure what to do with that.
Yeah.
But I think that if we get really serious about discipleship, it's going to get uncomfortable.
Mm.
So you can't just sit, absorb a sermon and then go home.
And go home.
It takes work.
Yeah.
And we're going to start trying to help people be accountable and
yuck, no thanks.
Exactly. You know, and so you just kind of go, okay, how do we do that in a way that's really gracious, but that's also that says this is really important. We can't just we can't
absolutely.
Be on cruise control. We can't take our foot off the pedal. We've really got to keep moving. You know, we've got to keep growing and developing. So I think that for me feels like the two biggest parts. And like that's broken down into all sorts of stuff,
absolutely.
You know, like our life group ministry and, you know, how we care for one another and those sorts of things. But I think those are the two things that I'd want to see at the top of our priority list.
Yeah. But I know that, like, you know, on that, like I'm super excited for what's to come this year because I do feel a real sense of this is no longer lip service, that there's a real sense of dedication from the church to be intentional about discipleship and evangelism and that they're not just going to be words that we throw out on a Sunday to make us feel like we're doing it, but that we're actually going to push the boundary and do it. And there is, you know, yes, I appreciate that there might be a group that might be uncomfortable for, but there's also a group who are, you know, chewing at the bit for it. And, you know, a church can't be everything for everyone, but I mean, I'm excited to see, particularly for our younger people, what this new way of Sunday will look like, and how, as I anticipate, they're going to eat it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not about putting all the eggs in one basket. There's more to it than just a discipleship cycle. But I think that this, I'm really excited about where this is leading us.
I think you're right. I think there's a real interesting space. I've been really intrigued by the kind of the slow restart. You know, we kind of went back to services and yet it's been just really kind of, I don't know, been a long slog.
Yeah.
You know, just the other week we had, there were a handful of people who were in all of our services who hadn't been back in a full year yet, just for one reason or another, hadn't been back face to face. And I've been reflecting a little bit. I think I shared this with you on Sunday. Just feeling like the return to Sundays hasn't scratched the itch that people have felt.
Yeah.
Mm. Like going back hasn't been the thing.
Mm. Yeah.
It's been good.
Yeah.
It's been really nice to see people in the flesh again and, you know, bump fists and actually have a conversation. Yeah, that's right. Have that conversation that's just not quite long enough to be officially mingling.
Yeah.
But, you know, more than a hello. You know, like all that kind of, it's been really nice. Mm. And now that we're able to sing, even with masks, just hearing people singing, that's been lovely. Mm. But there's a real sense that I have that it's not scratching the itch that people really have.
Like, and that says something, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it's a discipleship itch. You know, so yeah, Sundays play a part in that, but I think there's more out there. So at least that's how I'm choosing to read the situation right now. So,
Oh, I'm excited for it, Mark. Yeah. Thanks so much. There was so much in that I found really, really helpful. So thanks for sharing it.
Pleasure.
Sharing your thoughts.
Hey. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Matt, so from coming out of that discussion with Mark, is there anything that kind of stood out to you? Anything that challenged you? Or
yeah, I think I really loved. I know we stuck on it for a little, for a while, but that Lego analogy, it was just because I've got a 7-year-old and Lego is my life at the moment. But I know I love that idea of what Mark was saying about, like, when I put him on the spot and said, you know, what piece would you pick up? And his response was, actually, I think it's about letting them build something and kind of, and helping them understand where God is in that.
Yeah.
I actually think is a beautiful way of sharing the gospel. And it's that whole sense of I'm not the expert on someone else's journey of faith. I'm not an expert on what they've experienced or what maybe some of the barriers are for them when it comes to faith. And so that beautiful listening, silent listening of someone's story, but then kind of coming in and going, well, let me actually tell you what I know about Jesus and how I see, you know, the pieces that you've used, kind of where I see him in that and him working in your life. I actually think that, like if we're reading our culture and trying to recognize what's happening around us, I think that that is what people will respond to, not this and I don't mean this in an offensive way, but not this cookie cutter kind of approach of I'm just going to reiterate the same explanation of the gospel story over and over again, regardless of who you are, where you've been, what you've done and what you've experienced. So I love that individuality of it. And I think that actually ties in beautifully with what Belinda talks about with Plan A. Like, it's got to be based on relationship. It's got to be based on knowing people and just sowing those seeds and then seeing what kind of grows out of that. So yeah, I know that kind of, that was my vibe.
Nice vibe.
About you?
To be honest, this whole end times, Jesus is coming thing just full on freaks me out.
You're not comfortable with it?
No, I'm not comfortable with the apocalypse. And so my inclination is to just ignore and get a bit cozy and make my plans and have my mortgage and all that kind of stuff. And so having that, you know, that sustainable urgency where you kind of are thinking, you know, this is happening. I need to get on this and share the gospel a little bit more than I have. It's a bit stressful for me.
I'm a little bit uncomfortable. I'm getting all pinchy.
But everything that we've talked about is really good, and I like kind of breaking it down into those little steps of what can our church be doing, what we're doing.
Yeah,
we're doing this amazing Sunday night revamp, and
so excited.
If we just turn up to that, then we're on our way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 Absolutely. Right on.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see you on Sunday
at
the big announcement.
Yes.
You should all be there too.
I'm on call, so if everyone could pray for no babies that night because it's in my diary, I'm ready to come. I'll be there. Scrubs right or.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
For
thanks, Matt.
Three,
thanks,
Jessica
Thelma. Wait, who do I want to be, Thelma or Louise?
I can't remember which one's
I want
which.
The better one.
Oh, well, I mean, they both drive off a cliff. So,
I'm just sticking with Thelma. I'm Thelma. Okay,
Thelma.
Thanks, Louise.
No worries. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there for one of our services this Sunday, either online or on site, and that you snap the Slido QR code before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big Three podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Thanks for joining us for this week's Big Three and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.